So what role did you play for the next 7 years? It remained open.
Well, I was called managing director, and I headed up that operation. But it went through different steps. That first step was negotiate an agreement. Second step was to prove that that agreement was implementable. Mm-hmm. So we ran an operation for about 9 months on paper conversion. So buying in paper, cutting it down to size, wrapping it and selling it. And it, as a business, it's not something that I would jump up and down and say how successful we were. We ran it and we just about broke even on it. But what it did prove was that we could work with the unions and we could work with the workers. So we worked together on that basis. And the government were convinced that that was good enough and therefore they would release the funds for the full refurbishment of the paper mill.
How much was that?
Do you know, I cannot remember the figure, but I think it was around about £6 million at the time.
And that gave it a complete new revamp.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. When Clondalkin Paper Mills closed, there were three paper mills. Mm. One had been sold off. Where to, I'm not quite sure. I think to India, the smaller one. But it left two paper machines, paper machine one and two. One was a machine glazing paper making operation, which had a smooth side on one side. Yeah. The other was a writing and printing paper machine. Two good machines, and both of those were fully refurbished in all aspects to bring them up to quality, almost to the state of new paper machines. But also new raw material preparation, organization and equipment was put in place to support the manufacturing there.
Right. Now, having a good workforce, a good management, a good getting on well with the unions.
Very much the case.
And
very much the case. When we started in papermaking, we had everything going for us at the time. Mm-hmm. Actually, we had, and I take great satisfaction that we did it, Irish Gas and Bord Gas were trying to get large users online. They had a new pipeline that had only been put through Clondalkin 6 months beforehand. They needed somebody to buy a lot of gas. And I negotiated with them, and they introduced a formula to calculate the price. Mm. I've got a background in mathematics, and I looked at the formula and looked at the possibilities and worked out all the different possibilities. And the way they had framed this formula, I reckon there was no way we could lose. And I was right. We ended up getting gas at nearly half the price that we should have been getting it. Mm-hmm. And gas in papermaking, or oil or gas in papermaking, is exceptionally important. So we had this deal going in our favour, which was one of the huge pitfalls of papermaking in Ireland. We had cheap energy.
And just take me through those early. So in 1983, 4 and 5, and so on, you were selling paper.
Okay, the new operation didn't start until 1984. We didn't start paper manufacturing until 1986.
Five or six.
Because there were all these different steps that had been put in place and all the different operations and the refurbishment put in place. But everything was running smoothly. Everything was...
Why did it come to an abrupt end?
Okay. I'm going to have to be very careful with the words I use in this regard, because at the time I was working on the full belief and the full trust that the people that I was working with were fully trustworthy and honourable. And I'd found that to be the case with the unions. I'd found that to be the case with the workforce. We'd gone through so many different aspects of discussions and negotiations, and difficult discussions as well. And the bottom line was that the mill, when it was up and running, would then start to utilize more and more working capital and therefore needed banking support. So you have to look at the financial aspect in several different ways. The initial startup, the period during the refurbishment, and then the start period. But once you start moving in manufacturing, you start to require huge increases in working capital. Tommy will understand this. You have it tied up in your debts. And as that increases, so what's going to fund that? We had bank facilities set up in Ireland with a number of different banks based on the backup and the background of the Canadian individuals. As the money got larger and larger, this happened very, very quickly. Within 6 months of starting, your cash requirement goes at about a 45 degree angle. It gets bigger and bigger very, very quickly. So we were into millions within a matter of months. Just normal, this is what you expect. Mm-hmm. When we hit that stage, and as we required almost the top end of the requirement, the banks in Ireland found out, through whatever means, I don't know, that the new Canadian owners were not as substantial as they were led to believe. And in fact, they also realized that the new Canadian owners had not actually invested very much personally in the operation. That the person that had invested was this financial backer that they had. But they personally had not actually invested very much, nor actually had the Irish investor, Seamus Rountree. And then they realized that the people that actually were taking the biggest risk were the Irish banks. That they were part of a funding operation in an operation where the owners actually were taking minimal risk. And banks don't like that. They did their calculations. They did further checks. And in the end, they decided, no, we will cut our losses. We're not going to finance this thing anymore. Unless you guys can provide the rest of the working capital yourselves, we're out.
But that was a crazy decision because everything was put in place.
But you, if you could put yourself in the shoes of a banker and you realize that you've actually gone down the road hand in hand with these guys, and some way along that road you realize, wait a second, I'm the guy that's funding this whole blooming thing, and I don't own it. And then they realized that's where they were. And that's what happened.
But you, as managing director, I mean, you were there. It was a big call in your part to tell everybody that this is...
I had no ownership. I had no shareholding in the company. I had my doubts that these guys were substantial enough to run this operation on a financial basis. But with the enthusiasm of the startup and with the wish to see it run successfully, and we had been very, very successful in all the stages of the lead-in and the startup and the goodwill that we were getting from our customers, everything was flying, absolutely flying. The workforce were completely behind us.
Can I suggest, or can I ask you, why didn't you look for another backer? Why didn't you turn around and look for somebody else?
One, I didn't have any shareholding in the company. So it wasn't my place to look for another backer.
Okay.
I didn't own it.
But you were in charge.
I was the head manager.
Yeah.
But that's all I was.
Well, why didn't... Did you make that suggestion?
No. You cannot sell something that doesn't belong to you.
Okay.
So I didn't own the company.
You just stayed quiet.
I was an employee. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't stay quiet. But I was an employee.
Yeah.
And when the first appointment of receivers was made, we fought it tooth and nail.
Yeah.
And they were rejected. but only to be replaced by a second line. And during that fighting tooth and nail, and we fought with, alongside the workforce and the unions, the management of the company, it was patently obvious to us that we had no ammunition. We had nothing that we could fight with. We didn't own the mill.
Okay. So it was liquidation for the second time.
Yep. But this was liquidation, end game in liquidation. This nobody was going to step in to take responsibility for that. Actually, that doesn't clarify it completely, because the receiver that was appointed did try and sell the operation as a going concern. And they asked me to stay on and help with that as well. And with them, I met about five different parties, maybe more, but about five different parties that had said they would be interested. One was the Smurfit Group.
Oh, yes.
There were three different Canadian operations. One English operation, and then a few financial companies that had come to take a look. Now, unfortunately, some of these parties were only doing it out of curiosity, just to have a look. As you will find, if you want to sell your house, you're going to have people walking around your house just to have a look. They don't want to buy. So I saw that as well. But I did meet with and work with three different companies that were genuinely serious about it, absolutely serious about it. One was the St. Raymond Paper Manufacturing Company from Canada. I went to work for them after this. When the deal fell through, but the deal fell through for a variety of different reasons. The bottom line from their point of view was it was too small in a country that was too small. Now that sounds a horrible thing to say, but that is the truth. Mm-hmm. The mill was too small in a small country, and therefore the risk was too high.
But that mill was running for 150 years in a small country.
That's right.
And exporting paper abroad.
Yeah, but changing circumstances, changing environments, and changing, hugely, the biggest one probably, changing competition.
Yeah.
In 1936, I would guess there was no Brazilian paper in Ireland.
Yeah.
In 1936, there was probably very little Finnish paper in Ireland, made in Finland, I mean. In 1936, and I can keep going. In the 1980s, Ireland was flooded with all of these papers.
So you packed your bags and you went to Canada?
No. They did offer me a job in Canada, and my wife was reluctant to move, so I didn't take it up. But I worked with them for nearly 2 years on a variety of projects, working very much on the technical side and helping them work through different projects, etc. And then went off and started doing all sorts of different things with my life, and ended up running a training and development operation for people with disabilities.
My goodness,
so total change in
a man
everything.
Of all stories. But I really appreciated your telling me that incredible story about Clondalkin. It really is. John Kilduff, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.